Ladies and gentlemen, it's Spartans and Nailers Pull Out New Year!
Hello, I'm Andy Parsons.
And I'm Henry Naylor. Now, a lot of top artists are currently playing Unplugged. We thought we'd give our musical maestro the opportunity to do the same.
Some of the best stuff he's ever done, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Richie Webb.
News preview.
Yes, it's time to plan your New Year resolutions. I was thinking of making some, but then I thought I'd better not. George Bush might persuade the UN to force me to comply with them.
The paper's delivered his annual mutter. It's very hard to understand what he's saying. His message to the faithful goes... What? I think he said bury a ferret. At which point a billion Catholics inter a woodland creature. And God is seen to move in mysterious ways.
In last year's Christmas special, we predicted that the health service would remain rubbish, the rail network would remain rubbish, and the Tories would remain rubbish. Well done, us. In 2003, we're now predicting that the health service will remain rubbish, the rail network will remain rubbish. Yes, I think you know where this one's going, ladies and gentlemen.
What else will happen next year? Well, here are our predictions.
The government promises to finally outlaw fox hunting, but given that they also promised ethical arms trading and equal opportunities for everyone going to university, if I was a fox, I wouldn't relax just yet.
Once again, we'll see Mick Jagger pestering a 17-year-old for a date. And by a date, we don't mean the dried-up old fruit. But by Mick Jagger, we do.
In spring, it's the Cricket World Cup in South Africa. The team selections haven't been fixed yet, but it's likely the result has.
May is the local elections. The true test of Ian Duncan Smith, who said that this year that Jesus would be at home in the Tory party. Daft. Jesus was only in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights.
June, there's an increase in unemployment statistics. They're up by one. Ian Duncan Smith.
Summer is declared a heatwave after 2 days of consecutive sunshine. The nation leave all their sun loungers out overnight, and they're then ruined after 73 days of consecutive rain.
Autumn. There'll be another anniversary of 9/11, or 11/9, as we like to call it. All this 9/11, 9/11, I thought, well, I know what happened September the 11th. What the hell happened November the 9th?
October, the conference season. The Tories will once again claim that there are no more splits in the party, and the conference will go ahead in Bournemouth, and Eastbourne and Brighton.
Sports Personality of the Year will once again reveal Britain has had a slightly disappointing year. Not surprising when you find out Britain's favourite leisure activity is gardening. What we need to do is persuade the IOC to introduce weeding as an Olympic event. We'll be right in there. We may not be much cop at cricket, but we don't half mow a lovely wicket.
And finally, December, next year, the Pope will tell Catholics... What? I think he said conceal a badger.
It appears that this winter could be New Labour's winter of discontent. Of course, the farmers described their original 11% pay rise as an insult. Not a very good insult, is it? If you were driving along and somebody cut you up, It wouldn't be very good to wind down your window and shout out, "Oi! Do you want an 11% pay rise?"
It has transpired that one of Saddam Hussein's quirks is that he displays his birthday gifts in a museum. You'd be under pressure to give him a good one, wouldn't you? Museum guide giving the tour. On the right, from Saddam's son, Uday, a solid gold lion. On the left, from Henry, a £10 boots token.
It does seem that we may be at war at any time. Here is news at the start of a war, in a nutshell.
Good evening. I talk in a slightly more somber voice than usual, and I'm wearing a dark tie, in case I get slagged off like Peter Sissons did when the Queen Mother died. The main story this evening. American forces have today been bombing Hotspotistan. In the capital of Bagran Abulinople, there are said to be the usual scenes of devastation due to the familiar invasion of portly journalists demolishing supplies of local whiskey. As always happens at the start of any war, we go over to some grainy footage of something burning at night, which is out of focus. We go over to our grainy footage of something burning at night correspondent, Brian A.D. Simpson.
Today, something appears to be on fire. Could be a weapons dump burning in the distance. Could be the cameraman mucking around with a sparkler. I then suggest a missile has been fired and show footage of a flash of light streaking across the screen. Could be a missile. Could be the cameraman throwing the sparkler into a hedge as he's scared of burning his fingers. There is rubble and bricks lying everywhere. I blame this on their repressive government. Although anyone speaking Arabic can clearly hear a guy in the background shouting, "Get off, this is a building site."
When he heard of the bombing, the president of Hotspotistan, Saddam bin Ladafi, uttered angry words. We show footage of him saying it, and then somebody talks over the top in English. It's not clear whether this is a translation or whether a nearby Englishwoman was chatting away in a louder voice.
Aklima or Aklim, Aklim.
Yeah, I'm thinking of skiing in Val d'Isère with the twins this Feb.
I did not say this at all.
Yeah, I wasn't talking to you.
Oh, sorry.
The president responded by issuing a statement to an aide. Because the president is President Bush, we have to translate that as well. What do the troops think who are being sent into battle in Operation Who's the Daddy Now? This is one of them, Corporal Bozo from Doofusville, Minnesota.
I just say I'm here to defend my country, which is blatantly wrong, as I'm obviously here to attack another country. I then lose myself and say I'm international news broadcast. I love you, Jolene! Which upsets my wife, because she's called Mary Sue.
On all our news bulletins throughout the night, we repeat the something burning in the darkness which is out of focus footage. We think we are delivering cutting-edge live news to the public, but in fact the only people watching it at 3 a.m. are people who are completely hoovered. Who are going, "What? What's this? There's a blog over there chucking a sparkler into a hedge." Good night.
Culture.
Big Brother's Jade Goody, who thought East Anglia was abroad, is excited at starring in a pantomime at Gravesend, Kent. She's had all the inoculations and applied for the visa.
This year, Rolf Harris' paintings have been chosen for the Tate. Next year, his success will continue when he wins a Grammy for the re-release of Jake the Peg and the Nobel Peace Prize for Animal Hospital.
But now, please welcome our special guest, Lucy Porter! Now, in the season of Scrooge and Tiny Tim, we present Dickens in a Nutshell.
I am the central character, and some mishap has befallen me. For instance, my father has died, or my mother has died, or my mother and father have died, or I am an orphan.
I am the guardian of the central character, and I am either an avaricious financier or a beadle with mutton chops. I have a stupid name like Chuzzlefield, Turvey Drop, or Chesney Jellynog. And when I'm greatly vexed for some reason, I shout out about humbugs. I always feed the boy gruel, and for his birthday present, I'll give him a sound thrashing with the handle of a mangle. Humbugs!
I decide to run away from all this cruelty and meanness and gloom. I get taken on as a clerk in a legal firm, or a shipping firm, or a dust contracting firm, or as a usurer. On my travels, I meet someone who is a half-wit, or a cripple, or a convict, or a half-witted cripple who is in trouble with the law.
I am the half-wit, or the cripple, or the convict. I am fond of the boy, and determined to help him, although this won't be easy, because I'm a bit imbecilic, incapacitated, in prison.
I'm the love interest. At the beginning, it's not possible for me to contemplate that I will be the love interest because I'm either too superior to the central character, or too inferior, or too disinterested, or too much his sister. By the end, however, I have become less superior, less inferior, less disinterested, or turn out not to be his sister.
I also turn out not to be a half-wit, or a cripple, or a convict. I either show some degree of common sense, or recover the use of my limbs, or become the richest man in the world. I can now help my friend.
I meanwhile stop saying humbugs after being visited by a procession of ghosts. Or I have my pockets picked by a poor house full of chimney sweeps. Or I am murdered on a poop deck by a salty sea dog.
With each turn of events, I am now able to marry my love interest. There is every chance that we will live happily together and have a wonderful child. However, once we have had that child, the chances are we will both die, leaving the child in the hands of a humbugging financial beadle called Titus Uriah Copperdorich.
Christmas! To find out what the stars have been buying this Christmas season, we go over to one of the assistants at one of London's top department stores.
For the last couple of weeks here at Fortnum, Harvey and Jones, the whole store has been packed with celebrities doing their Christmas shopping. One of my first Christmas customers was Jerry Halliwell, fresh from her appearances as a judge on pop stars The Rivals. You can't help thinking that's a bit rich, can you? I mean, Jerry Halliwell telling you you can't sing, that's a bit like Michael Jackson telling you you're a bit odd. Or advising me on childcare, of course. Anyway, Jerry had a long list of pals to buy for, her bestest friends in the whole wide world, apparently. Elton John, George Michael, Robbie Williams, her colonic irrigationist, someone she met once in 1982. So I was just wrestling free from Jerry's bear hug when I noticed that big-faced evil man Michael Portillo had come in. He was buying a present for Ian Duncan Smith. He chose a beautiful fountain pen and decided to have it engraved. Now, I couldn't remember whether Ian spelt his name with one or two I's, but Michael said it was probably best just to have it inscribed to the leader of the Conservative Party. He said he didn't want it gift-wrapped and he slipped it straight into his pocket. Oh. Mary Archer came in on Christmas Eve. She said that this Christmas she wanted to give Geoffrey something like a cookery book or a really good board game. You know, she was after something that would really boost Geoffrey's popularity. I remarked that I didn't think he could actually give writer's block, but she... a bit of a huff. Anyway, just then, I noticed Elfin Beauty Winona Ryder. I asked if I could help her, but Winona said she was just browsing, so I left it to her. Lovely, lovely girl, Winona. Very big coat. And even though Christmas Eve was really busy, I really enjoyed helping new mums Liz Hurley, Kate Moss and Victoria Beckham with their shopping. You know, I love those really cute, tiny little outfits, and I think it's important that a new mum does spend some money on herself, you know. I beg it, because I think there's a problem on the third floor, because I just overheard Penny Lancaster saying that Rod Stewart's having trouble in the bedroom department. See you later.
Apparently, the post office are going to bring in a scheme whereby if a first-class letter arrives 4 days late, you'll get £3 compensation. So next year, just send yourself 333,333 letters in the Christmas post. Instant millionaire.
Everybody wants to spend Christmas with their loved ones. It's only natural. Sadly, most of us have to spend it with our families. Here is spending Christmas with your parents.
I'm the son. I'm taking my girlfriend down to my parents for Christmas for the first time. I'm nervous what my parents will think when they see my girlfriend's new lip piercing, eyebrow piercing, and one other piercing, which I'm hoping my parents won't see.
I'm the girlfriend. I'm a bit nervous about spending Christmas with his parents because Christmas means alcohol, and after any one glass of wine, I tend to giggle, swear, and tell everybody everything. When we arrive, his father hands me a glass of sherry, and I immediately ask him if he knew that I just had my clitoris pierced.
I am the father. I'm fairly sure my son's girlfriend just said the word clitoris. I think I'd better have another glass of sherry.
I am the mother. Luckily, I didn't hear the word clitoris. I've arranged separate beds for my son and his girlfriend. I don't care what they do under their own roof, but I don't want the neighbours coming round thinking I condone premarital hanky-panky. I forget, of course, that I had quite a lot of premarital hanky-panky. Not so much postmarital hanky-panky. I suggest we go down to the local church and celebrate the birthday of the Lord.
I suggest we get down to the local pub to do the same thing.
I suggest a compromise. Everybody agrees. Having spent too long in the pub, we then go to church and sing carols as if we were in some phone-in karaoke competition.
I take one sip of the communion wine and tell the vicar all about my piercing.
Realising that my mother may be a little stressed, I have offered to cook the Christmas meal. However, I have bought a turkey too big for the oven. I ripped the legs off and managed to squeeze it in.
Meanwhile, his mother suggests that she and I play games. We play a game of magnetic fishing, where you have to pick up fish with a magnet on a fishing line. I cannot believe I am doing this.
I am surprised to see the magnet is stuck to the front of her skirt.
I point out that the magnet might have been attracted to the piercing in her clitoris, darling.
I am struck dumb and unable to say anything for 2 hours.
This, to me, is the best bit of the holiday.
I then snap out of my trance and insist we watch the Queen's speech. I stand up for the national anthem.
I hate the Queen. I've had very little food for hours and am now very drunk. I lob a vol-au-vent at the telly.
That looks like great fun. I lob a vol-au-vent at the telly as well. I get the Queen just above the right ear. I'm severely reprimanded by my wife.
I have underestimated the cooking times. So we finally sit down for lunch at 7:15.
I complained that my turkey still isn't done.
I notice that she has got the two turkey legs. I point out they're not done because I couldn't fit them in the oven. The lunch is a disaster, but we finally all bond when we watch the Birds of a Feather Christmas special and all throw vol-au-vents at the table.
We enjoy this so much that we forget all the other difficulties and madly agree to do Christmas together again next year. We go through the same charade again, only next year the only difference will be that
I will have had both my nipples pierced.
Music. This very special week, I shall be looking into my crystal ball and saying, oh, a crystal ball. After that, I'll be considering the upcoming year in music, because 2003 is going to be a very, very exciting year for music lovers. We have got loads to look forward to. Pop Idol 2003, Pop Stars 2003, Fame Academy 2003. It's going to be great. Help me. But we have got January to look forward to. January, when all the CDs you didn't get given for Christmas are suddenly cheap, marked down in the sales. Must be awful for an artiste to see their hard work going for £2.99 in a bucket in Woolworths. I'm talking to you, Gareth Gates! Maybe. Maybe groups should club together and do something about it. They could do another Band-Aid. But for bands.
So feed the pop stars. Don't you know we've had our day? We're more useless than Miley out of here today. Save the pop stars as we fall off the bottom rung. One consolation, next year it will be William.
Of course, then comes spring. Spring, when the charts are filled with fun and life and excitement. And when Radiohead have a new album out.
I am a little spring lamb, gamboling in the top field, bouncy, bouncy, ooh, lunch.
But the big release of next year that I'm looking forward to, it's not Jeffrey Archer. Oh, no. But Madonna's new album, yeah, I have to confess, I am a massive Madonna fan. Well, for the purposes of this sketch, I am. And I'm really interested because this time, presumably, she's heavily influenced by the fact that she now lives in England. I was beat, incomplete, I fancied a nice bit of luncheon meat. Boiled beef, jelly eels, pie mash, proper meals, because I want to eat. Oh, ho! Yes, I want to eat like a cockney. Born within the sound of bow bells. Like a cock, 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 cockney. Because being English really sells. Those are my predictions for 2003.
We advise you against making New Year resolutions, but if you decide to, here's what really happens when you go on a health kick.
It's a sunny day, I feel good, so I decide, as from today, I'm going to eat healthily. I go to the supermarket and buy a ridiculous quantity of fruit and salad. Because I've been so good buying all the healthy stuff, I also buy a bottle of gin as a little treat.
I am a lettuce. I have a contractual obligation to stay all firm and crispy whilst in the supermarket, but now that I'm in a lonely fridge, I can feel the enthusiasm waning. I begin to go slightly limp.
I'm a pear. I've also left the supermarket and I'm now sitting in a fruit bowl. Despite the fact that I have been regularly squeezed, I remain as hard as a bullet and completely inedible.
Hey, I'm a bottle of gin. Oh, I was a little surprised to find myself alongside all the lettuce and pears in the supermarket trolley. Normally, I hang out with the Pringles.
I feel tired after my shop. Time for a drink. The healthy stuff can start tomorrow.
Me? Me? You so soon?
It's all lonely and dark in the fridge. It's much better in the supermarket. Really miss all the fun I had with my lettuce mates. The inside of my wrapper is now beginning to get a bit moist.
Soft, not me, hard as nails. If anybody so much as to try to nibble me, I will break their tooth.
I wake up the next day with a hangover. I decide to have a pear for breakfast.
No charge! I will never surrender! You will never be able to eat me!
Oh, the pear's still hard, and I can't have lettuce for breakfast. Oh, well, I suppose there's always hair of the dog.
Me again? In the morning? I'm already half empty, me. This can't be right. I was asleep.
Late that day, after work, I resolved to knock up something healthy using the contents of my fridge. I open it up.
I come to the rescue again? Twice, in fact, and then once for luck. I'm just one little drop at the bottom of the bottle now. Oh, no! I've evaporated!
I am now a puddle of green slime. And the slime is dribbling out of my wrapper and into the milk jug below.
Still rock hard me! No, no! That bloody lettuce has set me off! Curse it! I am now edible! Ah, too late! I too now am a puddle of slime!
Parsons and Naylor's Full Out New Year starred Andy Parsons, Henry Naylor, Richard Webb and Lucy Porter. It was written by the cast: David Quantick, Danny Roberts, Dan Tessel, Roderick Crooks, Chris Thompson and Peter Reynolds, Alan Stafford and Sue Panu. Additional lines by Paul Harrison, Paul Carenza, Melvin Dover, John Cam and Henry Whittaker. The producer was Katie Tyrrell. Head up a turkey, presents all broken, hate your family, give yourself a break. Log on to our website, www.bbc.co.uk/Parsons and Naylor.